Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
Author Garen Whited.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight, we're interviewing Garen Whited.
Hi.
Author of Fugue, the latest in the Book and the Night Lord series. Additionally, an aficionado of sci-fi and vampire-related trivia. Garen, welcome to our program.
I'm delighted to be here. Eric, how are you?
Doing well. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, you know, it's still early for me, but I love it.
It's true. It's true. We say tonight because normally we record during the evening because Matt is nocturnal and I am forced to be diurnal, but tonight is going to actually be today because it's the middle of the day on a weekend.
You know, hey, don't feel bad. I'm a writer. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon where I am, and you're lucky I got up for it.
There we go.
I'm a writer. Who's going to get me out of bed? I live alone. I'm good.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. 100%. I don't get off work usually until midnight. So.
Oh, yeah. My boss is a complete bastard. He has me working all hours of the day and night.
That's what being a writer does for you.
That's right.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not really my boss. It's all those people that live with me in my head.
Mm.
All those characters. We definitely understand that. So, Garen, talk to us about your book series, Night Lord, and specifically, you've just written Fugue.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who may not have read it, or if nothing else, a little bit more about the story itself, too.
Well, Fugue is book 7 in the series. They are monstrous, huge tomes on the along the lines of Harry Potter. Okay, so they are doorstops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the series follows Eric. He is the protagonist and is told mostly from his point of view. It started out as his diary, sort of. What happens is he is a junior professor of physics and computer science, and you know, pretty much your typical, you know, nerdy guy. And he is involuntarily turned into a vampire. At which point he discovers that that is the least of his problems, because there are apparently other worlds. There's magic. There are people who want to kill him because, well, let's face it, he's a vampire and that's just wrong. So we have to kill them, right? Okay, yeah. He learns to live with it, sort of. We discover there are different species of vampires, each with its own unique, problems, difficulties, and benefits and powers. There are all sorts of supernatural creatures. He has to deal with things that he never thought he would have to deal with. Basically, there's a huge character arc. It's been going on for 7 books now. As we watch him adapt and change and become, well, you know, a different person as time goes by. Immortality problems.
Sure. All right. So why vampires as opposed to any other undead?
It's true. There's lots of different undead.
Oh, yeah. Tons of them. You betcha. But zombies generally have the problem of being rather inarticulate. So here I am. I'm writing along. So brains. People don't read that for very long before they go, wow, this is kind of repetitive. Ghouls, typically, you know, they live in their cemetery and they, you know, wait for somebody to be buried so they can have dinner. Again, not something that goes out and does stuff that you can, you know, hey, look, we're having an adventure. Excuse me, I got to get back to the cemetery. I'm hungry. Time. Say what? And so on. But people are familiar with vampires, okay? They wander pretty much anywhere they want to go for the most part. Some of them have to get back to a specific coffin in their specific grave earth, but Eric's species isn't like that. They're kind of a go anywhere, do anything kind of undead. I mean, what more could anyone ask? It's true. We could have picked a lich for this, but then you've got that box with your, you know, phylactery with the soul in it, basically. And you've always got to be paying attention to where that is. It's just another complication. No. We'll be a blood drinking fiend of the night. That'll be perfect.
Makes sense.
So what do you think about the draw that people have with vampires? Because I know that there's been a lot of analysis written up on, you know, it represents our innate hunger for things, or greed in its most exemplified form, or the promise of immortality. But specifically, I would say in reference to your series, what do you think people find so attractive about this undead? Because as you mentioned, there's a lot of different undead,
mm-hmm.
but vampires crop up a lot more in literature. And you could put a different spin, for example, on zombies. Like, I don't know if you ever saw, what is it, iZombie? The one where she's a forensic pathologist?
Yes, yes. And she's eating people's dead brains. Yeah. Well, with zombies, I tend to think of the traditional zombies. You know, they may be somewhat smarter. Maybe they're sprinters. Maybe they're shufflers. But, you know, but I looked at, I've seen a lot of The Walking Dead and, you know, Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead. I mean, that's the, kind of the traditional zombie. And I thought, you know what? Well, I'm not going to mess with that. But vampires, on the other hand, they have a lot of different metaphors that go with them. I mean, originally, I think vampires were, from a superstition standpoint, a metaphor for disease. Okay. It couldn't come into your home unless you invited it. See, as a result, if you were cautious, say, oh, just off the top of my head, say living in a quarantine, for example, it was harder for them to get into your home. I mean, disease, that is. Of course, yeah, I'm a writer. Quarantine, that's Tuesday. I barely noticed. But that's kind of how they started in superstition and in mythology. And then as time went on, they became something else. Somewhere around Bram Stoker, a little bit later, things like that. Dracula, for example, started becoming more, sexy. Okay. It was kind of the lure of the vampire. Okay. The idea that not only was there a potential for immortality, physical immortality in this world, not in the next, not in the afterlife, but in this one, by consuming the lives of other things to add to your own. And of course, in Dracula, you also have the romance aspect of that, that love could be eternal, even though it's not really love for Dracula so much as it's obsession. Say, obsession with love as opposed to love itself.
That all-consuming obsession.
Yep. Yes, exactly. There you go. And while love can be all-consuming in a way, the obsession with it, you know, can turn even the brightest and best of things into something dark and twisted and terrible.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we here at the Goblin's Corner obviously enjoy vampires, as well as undead of all sorts. I happen to notice also that you are big into sci-fi as well. So,
oh yes.
On your profile, you got a couple Heinlein, Asimov, some of the classics, obviously, and you incorporate a lot of that into your works too. For example, you know, your main character is a physics teacher, so you do have like a lot of science in those elements in your stories and stuff. I would ask, what do you like most about sci-fi overall?
Well, I think science fiction gives us science fiction is fantasy that is tuned for the real world. Okay. It gives us a sort of hope. Fantasy, I think, is more of an escapism. Okay. We can get away from the world around us by imagining the lands of the West and Manwë and the Eagles, and that's where the home of the elves is. And here we are living in a sort of Middle Earth, except that we know we're not. I mean, it's fantasy. Okay, fine. Science fiction, on the other hand, you can look at and go, could we do that? Would that work? And good science fiction, I feel, allows you to suspend disbelief so easily that you then have to wonder, wait, do I actually have a computer I can put in my pocket and access information all over the globe? Oh, wait, yes, I do. Never mind. Sorry. You got to remember, I was born in like, you know, the early 70s, late 60s, somewhere in that ballpark. So, you know, the idea of a cell phone was like, that'll never happen. Cell phones are science fiction, or they were. Going to the moon was science fiction at one point, or it was. Okay, currently it's science fiction right now since we're not actually going, but we can. Science fiction gives you hope for us as a species, for the world in general. Fantasy lets you take a brief break from it and then come back and fight the good fight.
I like what you said about the suspension of disbelief too. And that is something and that you're also aware of, you know, in terms of being a storyteller. Good storytelling lets you easily have that suspension of disbelief, and of course, bad storytelling.
Yeah, it doesn't work so well. That's one of the reasons I like playing with Eric so much in the Nightlord series is that since he is a junior physics teacher, he's not the advanced physics guy, but he eventually learns to use magic, okay, actual spells in a fantasy environment. But he's a physics guy. So, well, hang on a minute. How would I make this work? Well, I could, Archimedes once focused a lot of solar power into a kind of a, not really a beam, but he focused it on enemy ships, according to legend. How about I do that? And suddenly you've got a lot of, you know, typical medieval type wizards going, where did he get all that power from? My goodness, these spells are amazing. No, I'm just redirecting existing energy, guys. It's not a, never mind. I'm not going to explain.
Nice. So he's got a parabolic mirror to burn down his enemies. Fantastic.
Yeah, kind of. Actually, what he's doing is he's changing the refractive index of a large chunk of air, turning it into a lens, and then he's doing it again to turn it into a beam. Right. He's also shifting the frequency of the wavelengths of light that are coming through it, so it's all moving into more of an infrared range. So it's directly heating up things in an actual beam, as opposed to having, you know, a huge number of mirrors or all arranged in a parabolic arc. It's only about a meter in diameter, but imagine all of that energy being turned into a beam a centimeter wide. What am I cutting through? Pretty much anything I aim it at.
We have our laser.
Yes.
Here.
Instead of the Archimedes mirror, we have the Archimedes ray.
Would you consider yourself, because, you know, there's various genres of sci-fi. We got mm-hmm. hard science stuff. You've got the space opera like Star Wars,
yep.
space fantasy, which probably also Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
The sci-fi horror. Is there a particular genre that you lean to the most, maybe not in writing, but more in like just that you prefer to read?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Asking a novelist what they read.
Yeah. I mean, I just glance at my shelf and I got a lot of Heinlein on the shelf. Friday, A Stranger in a Strange Land, Citizen of the Galaxy. One of the things I do note about my sci-fi preferences is that most of the sci-fi I try to read, or that I find I've enjoyed reading, is more about the people than strictly about the technology. The technology mm-hmm. should be in the background. It's there. It gives you rules. It tells you what we've got to work with within the framework of the story. And as long as that stays consistent, it shouldn't impinge on the reader too much. Okay. It's not about how does this weapon work? How does the drive system in this ship work? Why do the shields do things the way they do? Once you've explained that, you're done. Move on. Because it's really, like any good story, about the people and how this affects their lives. Okay. It's never about the technology. It's never about the magic. It's about the people. That's where you find a good story, because people relate to people.
100%. You know, we're talking about good story. So we're going to switch gears slightly.
Yes.
We see that you also have played Dungeons & Dragons and Lord of the Rings.
I've played Dungeons & Dragons a few times.
So that's a little more in our bailiwick.
Okay.
What other tabletop role-playing games have you played?
D&D box set, AD&D, D&D 2nd edition, D&D 3, 3.5. I refuse to play 4th. I played Pathfinder briefly. I'm not playing 5th. I'm not even going to go there. Boot Hill, Gamma World, Star Frontiers, DC Heroes, Marvel Heroes.
He's just GURPS, reading the list off of my bookshelf. That's all he's doing.
Amber Diceless role-playing game. Mutants and Masterminds. Oh Lord, I don't really remember all of them, but yes, bunches.
Nice. Fantastic. So much like us then. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
You're saying your books are currently holding the weight of your house up, just like my house. Very good.
No, but I do need to get some foundation work done, as part of the house is kind of like starting to sink a little.
Is it the part that's directly under your bookshelves?
No comment.
Okay.
What do you like most about tabletop games specifically?
Well, one of the things I think is best about it is that when I sit down and I just write, I kind of know where this is going. I know what's going to happen. And if that scene doesn't work, I can start over, do the scene again, sort it out, do the second draft, third draft, final draft two, final draft three, final draft four, really final draft one. Yeah, I'm a writer. That's how that works. But when I'm sitting around a table, you get it right the first time. Or you just adapt to what happened End of story. You don't go back and say, no, guys, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Let's rewind that about a, no, that's not going to happen. And the players or the DM, depending on which side of the table I'm on, they do things I didn't expect that I didn't think of. Okay. So I get to go, ooh, hey, that's an idea. Let's see how that works out. And I get to adapt and improvise and you know, think on the fly. You know, instead of thinking it out carefully, my wits have to be sharper. See?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the whole improv side of things is part of what we absolutely love. So how would you say that Dungeons & Dragons and Lord of the Rings has actually affected you as a storyteller?
Well, I would say that the Lord of the Rings, right off the bat, gave me something to shoot for as a kid. Okay. It was a style of prose and a level of world building that kind of said, oh, well, that's how you do it. See what I mean? Because flattery being the sincerest form of, you know, or excuse me, imitation being the sincerest form of flattery. I thought, well, if I could tell stories like that, well, yeah, I mean, if I could tell stories like that, I'd do my best. I'm sorry, but, you know, Tolkien, he's just up there. I will aspire to that for the rest of my life. And, you know, later when I'm dead, people can decide if I came close.
He set a pretty high bar, I'll have to admit.
I need a pole. I can't just hurdle that. But that's kind of what it gave. That's kind of what The Lord of the Rings gave me. You know, I mean, I still sit down, haul out the Silmarillion and just read for a while, you know, just to kind of get back in that groove. As for tabletop, having dealt with a lot of players, can you tell I DM a lot? Having dealt with a lot of players, it has provided me with, I think, a lot of different perspectives for problem solving. I mean, if your main character is going to go solve a problem, he needs to think creatively. And then if a lot of the other characters are also out to do things, they have their own motivations and goals, just like a bunch of players do. And I think it's really helped in that it doesn't, tabletop has given me a better appreciation for the fact that other people are going to think in other ways, and I need to think in those other ways in order for the rest of the characters, not just the main character, to react in fashions that they find reasonable according to their understanding of things.
That's a good way to put it. There's we talk a lot about on our show the consequence of actions theory.
Yes. Personal responsibility. You did it. It's your fault. Your problem.
You know, you roll into a town, slay the mayor because you got mad at the bar.
Ugh.
You're either going to have people after you or they're going to go at least elect another mayor at some point. And so stories in general don't just stop when the characters leave that area.
Yes, that's correct.
Now that takes a lot of forethought after the fact thought.
Mm-hmm.
Afterthought, I guess.
Yes.
And because you want to make sure that it is, and this is going back to the believability aspect as well. You want that suspension of disbelief, but you can't have that if everything is just, you know, like a broken video game. You have to kind of juggle multiple ideas in your head. So I can see that that's a very useful skill to anybody who maybe wants to become a writer or are practicing writers now to play games, right?
Yes.
Get that skill under your belt so that you can then start generating unique worlds and think about all of those minutia that may get forgotten if you're going on a linear storyline.
Going back to what you said, seeing different people's methodologies
mm-hmm.
allows you to get outside of your own head. Because when you're writing a story, if you haven't played RPGs, you tend to problem solve from your own headspace.
Yes.
Even if you're trying to do it through another character's voice.
That's correct. Absolutely.
But playing with dozens of people over years allows you to see a whole bunch of different methodologies that otherwise you might not have come across.
Oh, yeah. I'll sit there and I'll go, well, no character would do that. That's irrational. Oh, wait, never mind. I keep thinking like I would think. And of course, I think that I'm rational. And if I don't do it the way I would do it, then clearly that's wrong. And yet, I know people who would do that. Well, that's not believable, but no, I know people who would do that. Okay, never mind. I'll do it that way. Fine. So, yeah.
Deeming's often like herding cats, I've found. The cats will go in the direction you don't want them to go in because that's the least prepared you are and you happen to be.
Yes, and the problem is you don't have a good laser pointer for humans.
Yeah, because you can't even give them a story arc that's clearly identified. Hey, I'm hand-fisting the story down your throat, because they'll still be like, that's cool. I want to go do this. I mean, there's a door here that happens to be a broom closet. Why is it just a broom closet? Now you have to make something.
Guys, the plot hook is over here.
Why are you making me turn this broom closet into a portal to another dimension? Fine, I'll make it a portal.
Guys, the mayor has been eating people. Go kill the mayor. Yeah, but the broom closet.
The mayor is a mimic. Yeah, but this broom closet is really interesting. It's got this one object that I didn't expect it to be because the DM kind of flubbed and had a brain fart and there is a can of tuna in there. I want to know why there's a can of tuna in there.
I'm throwing detect magic on the broom. Does it fly?
No, it sweeps.
Oh, it's a broom of sweeping. No, it's not a... Wait, if I can't detect any magic on it, it could be an artifact. Guys, it's a broom.
You know what? I'm going to let them keep the broom. I'm not going to tell them it's not an artifact. And, maybe if they put enough faith in the broom that it'll develop some powers.
I'm just going to wait till somebody jumps on the thing, leaps off of a cliff or a wall and says, it'll fly or it won't. Okay, it won't.
Broom has enough confidence. It begins to believe it, too, can fly.
That's right.
Yeah, see, there you go. Yeah. Finally, we've got a good handle on this.
I see what you did there.
Ouch.
All right. So we're going to wrap up in a second, but just out of curiosity, you've played a lot of editions of D&D and other games. If
yes.
You were going to transport yourself to pick a game, what class would you want to play or be in this case?
I would probably go with wizard. And the reason for that is a wizard can know potentially, a whole bunch of different spells. That means they have the versatility to do almost anything they need to do based on how they prepared for the day. Mind you, I'm not going adventuring. That's not my speed. I'm a natural born indoorsman. I would prefer not to be out on the dusty trail eating rubber food and riding horses forever. Not my thing. However, sitting quietly in my tower throwing a dozen spells a day, yeah, I could totally do that.
You have the cleanest wizard tower with unseen servant, mage hand, everything.
I'm just going to enchant unseen servant into the tower. That prestidigitation or cantrip spell that keeps things clean. Yeah. Enchanted into the tower. You betcha. The house is going to be great. What's that? Ray of frost. What are you using that for? Air conditioning. It also makes ice in the ice trays over there in the fridge. What's the fridge? Trust me. It's absolutely cool.
Yep. I'm with it. Hey, somebody's got to be the research wizard.
Yeah. And I would totally be happy with that. I would found a library. Just, hi, I'm a wizard. I have a library. You want to come study spells out of my library? Bring me a spell. Okay.
This is the problem with some game mechanics, in that a lot of times people assume that gaming is all about the combat spells, which are fun. And to be honest, a lot of gaming is escapism, which is why you have more combat spells.
Mm-hmm.
But something that a lot of the later editions, especially D&D, we've actually talked about this a lot as well, is that there's no just random spells like I want to comb my hair or I want to, change my clothes to be something completely different, or I need to, I don't know.
Well, in D&D, they have addressed that in a minor fashion. With things like the cantrip spells in the early editions and prestidigitation in the later editions. I'm wearing my clothes. I cast prestidigitation. It lasts for, an hour, something like that? Woof, my clothes are now clean. Here I am on the trail. I didn't have to bathe. Problem solved. You know what? These bright colors aren't appropriate in the forest. I'm wearing camo. clothes are still the same. They're just a different color. See?
Sure.
You know, stuff like that. What? Comb my hair? Hair combed, beard trimmed.
But there's definitely a de-emphasis on a lot of that in...
There is. That's correct. But I think that's mainly because in a role-playing game, I don't want to role-play trimming my nose hair. I mean, that doesn't seem like something that I really want to do in front of a bunch of even good friends, you know, sitting around a table munching on snacks. I trim my nose hair. What do I roll? Hold it. I think we've gotten a little too deep into the character here. See what I mean? But you are correct. I agree. They don't have a whole lot of just random spells. They're focused mainly on things that might be useful in combat or during adventures, not just around the house.
Yeah, I feel like in a place where magic exists, like, take technology here, right?
Yes.
We've made tiny little pocket Tamagotchis.
Mm-hmm.
There's zero function to that, but somebody had to put that together.
Yes.
For nothing other than the sheer self-amusement of it.
Mm-hmm.
That exact same premise would be applied to wizards all over the place.
I agree.
Probably like animated toys, things like that. These and these may not be spells, but this is something when world building that I think is missing from a lot of games. Like one of the things I liked about, and you've played Forgotten Realms, obviously, but one of the things I loved about the Forgotten Realms is that that Ed Greenwood and all the other writers that have created the Forgotten Realms is the rich history that they have in building the world. And a lot of like the newer books don't have a lot of that, although Eberron's not bad in the D&D universe as well in terms of, and I think that's a lesson for a lot of people is whether you're playing a game, when you're telling a story, especially collaborative storytelling, getting the other players involved as well, making that rich world, is it ever going to be used by a character? Probably not, but
it is kind of important to know how the world got the way it is. So you can at least have some idea of where it's going from here.
Yep.
Totally agree with that.
But I will share something with you real quick. We did come up with something in a D&D game. You're familiar with the Endure Elements spell.
Oh, yeah.
Last 24 hours and you're immune to, you know, temperature effects of like negative 40 to 130, somewhere in that ballpark.
Yep.
Something ridiculous, right? So what we did was we enchanted Socks of Comfort. They ran about, I think, 1,000 gold pieces, 500, something like that. From an adventuring standpoint, once you're medium to high level, whatever, I'll buy a pair. You know, spent the extra money to make sure you could wear them and wear magic boots at the same time. So it didn't take up your feet slot, so to speak.
Sure.
And then it occurred to us, who in their right mind would not want these?
Obviously no one.
I'm at a constant comfortable temperature. The air conditioner isn't running. The heater isn't on. I'm out here on the trail in whatever random weather there is, and I'm comfortable.
Sit in the hot-ass desert. You could sit in an igloo. You'd be just fine.
Yeah. People wandering around the castle. Cold stone. Nope. Wearing my socks. Yep. Oh, so I don't have cold feet on the cold stone floor? Nope. The servant has failed to light the fire in my bedroom before I got up? Yeah, don't care. Wore my socks to bed.
And then you just cantrip them clean every day.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're never dirty and they never stink.
Saves on firewood, man.
Yeah.
And then with ever-burning torches, you don't even need light.
Yep. You see that mat on the floor next to the bed? Every morning when I get up, I put my feet down on it. It throws a clean cantrip at me. Vorp. Okay. I'm cleaned. I'm effectively bathed. I'm comfortable temperature. I get dressed in whatever I'm wearing, and off I go. And these are cheap, tiny little spells. Anyone who can afford them, by God, will get one.
We're getting a deeper and deeper picture of what your wizard tower would look like.
No doubt.
He's got a bathrobe, some bunny slippers, the most comfortable wizard ever.
He's going to look like the dude.
This magically enhanced rug really ties it in.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man. Hey, the wizard exactly. Box.
There you go. Garen, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. Let's tell our listeners where they can find you on the web.
I'm at GarenWhited.com, and if that's difficult to find, look for Nightlord Sunset. Nightlord Sunset is the first book in the series. I got others. There's Dragon Hunters and there's Luna. They're not, you know, part of the series, but Nightlord find that on Amazon. You'll find my author page. You'll be able to spell my name and you'll be able to find my website.
And he's got an Instagram and a Facebook as well. And we'll post all of that on our site.
Do I have Instagram?
It was on your profile.
I do. When did that happen?
Did you make one and then forget about it?
That's possible. I mean, people tell me you need to be on social media. I'm a writer.
That's
I don't
what we
have
do with our
social.
Pinterest. I post whenever I remember that I have one.
I would assume that your Instagram is just for book covers.
I don't know. I'll look. I'm not sure. But yeah, I'll take a look at that. But yes, I'm also on Facebook and I'm also on Twitter. And I'm sure there's something else now that I've been told I have an Instagram account. Okay. No doubt there's some other social media I'm on. I'm not sure what it would be, but I'm sure there is. Google me. You'll find me. Google knows me.
Google knows all. The overlord will find you.
And my official position is that I welcome our robot overlords. Because I'm talking into a computer right now and it's listening.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for chatting with us. It's been fun. We'll have to definitely talk again. If nothing else, we'll have to get you playing a game with us at some point.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been great, and we will talk to you again soon.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
All right, guys. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And you've been listening to The Goblin's Corner. We'll see you next time. The Goblin's Corner is written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staples.
The music is by the Mighty D20.
This has been a Subterranean production.